literary figures as disparate as Germaine Greer and Hunter S. Thompson, Bret Easton Ellis, and Margaret Thatcher appear together on his publishing resume. Now Sonny Mehta can add Publishers Weekly's Person of the Year to that lengthy roster of achievements. Welcome to Copyright Clearance and its podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. The editor-in-chief of Alfred A. Knopf and chairman of the Knopf Doubleday Publishing Group, Sonny Mehta is no stranger to accolades. Among others, he can boast of such titles as one of the 101 most powerful people in entertainment from Entertainment Weekly and membership in the Hall of Fame in Vanity Fair's Best Dressed Men in the World. With details on the Publishers Weekly Award, Andrew Albanese joins me from the Trade Magazine's office as he does every Friday. And welcome back to Beyond the Book, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
Well, we are getting down to the end of the year, which for all kinds of news hounds like you and me means a slew of awards and look backs and top 10 lists. And in Monday's issue for PW, you've got a couple of these, starting with the big one, PW's Publishing Person of the Year.
Absolutely. You know, Monday is one of our biggest issues of the year. And of course, in that issue is our Publishing Person of the Year, as you mentioned, and it is Sonny Mehta, the longtime publisher of Knopf. And we give him the award this year for as much as what he's done throughout the year as for his remarkable career in general, and primarily for guiding Knopf over three decades of pretty massive change in the industry without ever yielding on the standards on which the imprint was built. So, you know, why this year did we decide to give it to Sonny? We probably could have given it to him any year. But once again, you know, Knopf just got through the completion of another major merger. Actually, Penguin Random House got through another major merger. And once again, Sonny's brought his staff out on the other side with his usual aplomb and with Knopf still being, well, Knopf. So you can read our interview with Sonny in Monday's issue or on the PW website, which is it's up there today. And in an age of constant change and increasing pressure, Sonny's award this year, I think, proves to be a study in the value of staying the course when it comes to doing great books, to recognize Sonny Mehta with this year's award.
Well, as you say, congratulations to Sonny from all of us at Beyond the Book. And for anyone listening who's not familiar with his literary resume, I really encourage them to go have a look. It's a remarkable series of wins. I mean, if anybody were playing like that at a casino, they'd have been thrown out of the house. It's remarkable. So congrats again to him. And of course, there were a number of finalists in that awards for the Publishing Person of the Year, and they are also profiled. They get a little bit of attention from you as well. Tell us about some of those notables.
Yeah, well, to me, this is always the most fascinating and most interesting part of putting this issue together. That's the finalists, the runners-up, the notables, as we call them, and an amazing crop again this year. And I won't go over all of them, but I can point to a few. A very close runner-up, someone who's building a literary resume of his own that's quite impressive, Jeff Klosky, the president and publisher at Riverhead Books, which is also a division of Penguin Random House. Quite simply, no publishing imprint had the kind of commercial and critical success in 2015 that Riverhead Books did. The Girl on the Train by Paula Hawkins, which has sold 3.5 million copies, I believe. In October, A Brief History of Seven Killings by Marlon James won the Man Booker Prize, and Lauren Goff's Fates and Furies won a National Book Award. It was a National Book Award finalist in fiction. This is just a few of the great books that came out at Riverhead this year. The imprint has earned Jeff Klosky a promotion as well to the title of president now of the imprint. You know, and I'm looking for Jeff to have a career much like our winner this year, his colleague Sonny Mehta. We also honored Joyce Meskis, who is the retiring owner of the Tattered Cover Bookstore, which is the great bookseller in our co-producer Jeremy Brisky's hometown of Denver, Colorado. This July, Joyce began a two-year process of turning over the reins of the Tattered Cover Bookstore to industry veterans Len Vallejos and Kristen Gilligan. Under Meskis's 41-year stewardship, that's 41 years with that store, the Tattered Cover has grown from a small 900-square-foot bookstore into one of the nation's most recognizable independent booksellers. It was among the first bookstores to move to a computerized inventory system, among the first to use a retail website. And I'd point out that the Tattered Cover also has stood up for our First Amendment on a number of occasions. Meskis has been a plaintiff in a couple of lawsuits challenging the constitutionality of Colorado laws that sought to restrict displaying books that may be deemed harmful to minors. And she's perhaps best known for going to court to quash a search warrant for the book purchase records of a customer. And she's also fought warrantless searches, under the Patriot Act. And finally, one more person I'd like to shout out is Chris Jackson, who is the VP and executive editor at Spiegel & Grau, which is, ding, 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 another Penguin Random House imprint. It's hard to point out an editor that's had a better run than Jackson. Among Jackson's highlights in 2015 were two books that took home major prizes, Brian Stevenson's Just Mercy, which won the ALA Carnegie Medal for Excellence in Nonfiction in June, and last month, Ta-Nehisi Coates' bestseller, Between the World and Me, which is the number one New York Times bestseller, took home the 2015 National Book Award for Nonfiction. And this spring, before those two prizes were even announced, Jackson was promoted to his current title, which is VP and Executive Editor. And he has a number of other hits on his resume, including Jay-Z's Decoded, Blake Mycoskie's bestseller Start Something That Matters, Warren St. John's Outcasts United, Wes Moore's bestselling book, number one bestselling book, I believe, The Other Wes Moore. He works with Matt Taibbi, Jill Leovi's Ghetto Side, which was one of two New York Times Book Review front page reviews his books got in the first half of 2015 alone. So, you know, at a time when nonfiction book publishing is under increasing pressure from new media, Jackson's success, I think, shows that good books remain at the heart of our country's cultural discourse. And amid rising inequality, issues of race, political tension, the voices that Jackson specifically seeks out and publishes, I think, are ever more crucial to that discussion. So congratulations to those runner-ups, and you can check out all of them on the PW website.
Well, indeed, bravo to them all. And, you know, you speak about books and their importance to our culture and our lives. Well, that's a nice segue to talk about libraries. And in this issue coming out, you've got a special spotlight on the upcoming ALA Midwinter Conference coming in January to my hometown. Well, it's had to tell Boston, Massachusetts.
A trip to Boston in January. Who could resist? But, you know, I'll say what I said last year when the midwinter meeting was set for Chicago. Boston is a great city. And even more, it's a great library city. I think the words above the Boston Public Free Library, free to all, speak volumes. And I'm happy to be in the city where we're reminded of that. And frankly, I don't care what month it is. A trip to Boston, especially a trip to Boston to talk about libraries, is always welcome. So for librarians who are going, please do look for me there or stop by the PW booth. And, you know, a quick program note, I will be speaking at the Digital Content Working Group session on ebooks on Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. So you can find me there, if not on the show floor.
Well, we look forward to welcoming you and hosting you to Boston. And indeed, at the Boston Public Library, I'll have to take you there, Andrew, and show you a few secret corners of that fabulous building. It's more than just a collection of books. It's an artwork in itself. And also in Monday's issue of PW, you have a look back at the top 10 library stories of 2015, as well as a peek ahead to 2016. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I'm going to resist once again running down all of them, all top 10 here, but, you know, I'll shout out a few of the top stories in what was once again a pretty active 2015. You know, the top story once again was, no surprise, ebooks. And, you know, you might think it was a quiet year for libraries and ebooks since the battles over access that we saw in years past have now subsided. All of the major publishers are now lending library ebooks. And in 2015, the mini majors like Norton, for example, and a couple of other holdouts, that weren't lending library ebooks got in the game too. But, you know, now is when things get really interesting, I think. And this is part of what I'm going to be addressing at ALA Midwinter in my talk on Sunday morning. And, you know, I say that because it's getting interesting because libraries have gotten basic access to ebooks. That's a done deal. But the ebook market now is starting to tank a little bit. You know, it's something we've discussed many times on this show. Sales are down, prices are up. And I think it's worth asking if ebooks are starting to lose their luster with consumers. And that matters for libraries because ebooks for libraries are expensive. They are labor intensive. They're all sold with different restrictions. They expire at different times. They have to be managed differently. You know, so what happens with the ebook market in general with readers is an ongoing concern to librarians. And despite having basic access to ebooks, libraries, in fact, I think have much to be concerned about as 2016 unfolds. So also on the top 10 list, I talk about fair use cases like Google and the Georgia State E-Reserves case, and I discuss how those two cases may intersect for libraries in 2016. I also look at the bid to establish an independent copyright office that also made the list. That is a bid to take the copyright office outside the purview of its current home at the Library of Congress. And while that draft proposal, I think, is probably not likely to go anywhere, at least not in 2016, I do know, and I think it could very well reshape how the battle lines are being drawn as copyright reform continues to bubble up. And one of the most interesting stories to me in 2015, and one that's going to be a big deal in 2016, is about the Librarian of Congress. And as we've discussed, you know, the longtime Librarian of Congress, James Billington, retired in 2015. And President Obama now has a chance to appoint the first Librarian of Congress in the digital age. And I think it's kind of a big deal. You know, Billington was appointed in 1987, and he's been widely criticized for his lack of leadership throughout the digital revolution that's taken place during his tenure. But I wonder if the appointment of the next Librarian of Congress is going to be hamstrung by politics. And for those who would wish to see a stronger digital leader in that role, the Library of Congress role, I'd point to the legislation and the litigation and the other policy shifts that often now divide the library community from the entertainment and publishing industries. So do we get a leader in the Library of Congress role who's going to, you know, lead the charge on issues that the ALA finds important? Or do we get a leader in that role who's going to carry the water for the content industries? And of course, there's the tech industries who are weighing in on this as well. So I think it's one of the more interesting stories to look forward to in 2016, and that's who will be the next Librarian of Congress.
Well, if there's a story to break on that subject or anything else in 2016, we know we'll hear it from you. But you know, I have to say, Andrew, it's really remarkable to think that the Librarian of Congress, a role that probably wasn't on the radar of anyone outside the Library of Congress just a few years ago, is now so critical to the publishing future. It's remarkable.
It is remarkable, and it's also landed on the radar of Congress. You know, one thing I should also mention is that the Library of Congress role historically has had no term, and over its history has swelled into becoming this lifetime appointment. But this year, Congress jumped in the game and actually passed a bill. You probably didn't hear much about it, but President Obama signed it on November 5th, and it term limits the Librarian of Congress to a 10-year term. So that has now been passed. So Barack Obama will not have a chance to appoint a lifetime Librarian of Congress. His next one will be term limited out in 10 years.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And again, as we say, once we know who the next Librarian of Congress is, we'll talk about it here in Beyond the Book with you, Andrew Albanese, senior writer at Publishers Weekly. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, as always.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, find us on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, beyondthebook.com. Our engineer and co-producer is Jeremy Briskey of Burris Marketing. My name is Chris Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.